So today I'll describe a little bit about the canonical perturbation theory, like why it fails when your system is non-integrable. And then I'll show some numerics for two systems, standard map and Hennen-Hellis system. So suppose you have an integrable Hamiltonian, which is H naught. And since it is integrable, it can be described only in terms of action variables, right? So H naught is only a function of J naught. Now the perturbed Hamiltonian is H, which is a function of both action and angle variables. And suppose it can be expanded in terms of epsilon as a series like this in different orders of epsilon. Now, in order to solve it, we seek a canonical transformation from this set of action angle variables to a new set omega comma j. So this is omega naught j naught, this is omega comma j, such that this perturbed Hamiltonian can be described like it is not dependent on omega anymore, which is angle variable. And you can expand this in terms of like epsilon, different orders of epsilon. So I am briefly, by the way, I am briefly describing it here. It's in Goldstein, I guess, section 12.4. Described in detail. If anyone is interested, you can go and check out the detailed calculation. I'm just briefly describing the problem here. So now, once we obtain these k's in this expansion, we can obtain the perturbed frequencies also. Sorry, I generally use theta for angle here and omega for frequency. Here I have used from book, like it was used W, I guess. So yeah, so perturbed frequency can be also expanded in terms of like unperturbed frequency nu naught, which will be del H by del J, del H naught by del J naught, and plus epsilon times del k1 by del j plus epsilon square and so on. So for this, obtaining this canonical transformation, like in general, you remember there are different types of generating functions in classical mechanics, like two, four types that we use to. So let Y be the generator here, which is a function of old angle variables and new action variables. So that's how you define different types of generating function. Combination of old and new angle and action variables, right? So let this Y be the generator of canonical transformation from this old action angle variables to new action angle variables So you can expand these generator in a similar fashion. So notice that these omega and j's here are vectors actually, in the sense that n degrees of freedom, so n numbers, so this is the dot product. So through some calculations in Goldstein, they expand these yk's in this generator of canonical transformation in terms of like expansion in Fourier series. So here L is again a vector and summation over all possible L except L equals to 0. So after some calculations in Goldstein, you can see that like yk here bk, so first order coefficient is given by some number divided by now L is a vector here. So now yesterday we were talking about resonant frequencies. So if these frequencies are resonant, then there exists a vector L such that summation over it can be 0. So resonant frequency, if there is a set of frequencies, like suppose just two frequencies, then if the ratio is rational, it can be written as some L1 by L2, right? So L1 and L2 are integers, so then this is called resonant frequency. So likewise, we are generalizing it to n frequencies. So summation over Li omega I. If there exist positive integers Li such that summation over Li omega I is 0, then this is a set of resonant frequencies. Otherwise, they are non-resonant. Like the frequency can be, the ratio can be irrational as well. I'm just saying that. So here I am saying that if nu naught like are a set of resonant frequencies, then L dot nu naught will vanish for some L vector, right? So in that case, you can see that this coefficient is going to blow up. So if this coefficient blows up, then the first, no, so this is the first order, then even the first term with epsilon here will blow up. So yesterday we were discussing like under perturbation of an integrable Hamiltonian, when we weakly perturb an integrable Hamiltonian, non-resonant tori are preserved. They are slightly deformed but preserved. Resonant tori, they break apart. So why do they break apart? Why, like, we can't explain it using perturbation theory? So this is just a brief explanation that what happens there. So one thing, like, if it is resonant, then it blows up. The other thing is, suppose, like, there exists Li's, L vector such that this summation is very small. So in case, yesterday I was talking about measure of irrationality, right? If they are weakly irrational versus strongly irrational. So if they are weakly irrational, then there can exist a vector Li such that this number is small. So if this number is small, then also then overall this coefficient will be large, and your perturbation theory, the expansion, this expansion can also like not be valid. It can be divergent instead of being convergent. So those are the reasons where it actually is like perturbation theory doesn't work. So it works as long as the set of frequencies that we are talking about are like incommensurate, like their ratios are irrational. So locally, you can still use perturbation theory in phase space to understand the dynamics in some local region, but globally, you can't find a solution because of failure of perturbation theory. So, that was something I wanted to talk about. Like, this is a common problem known as the problem of small denominators, actually, which was known since 19th century. Like in astronomy, they were facing these problems in predictions. So, and Poincaré like showed why these series can't be these perturbation, the series formed out of these perturbation theory can't be convergent, like in the beginning of 20th century. So as I discussed, like I will show some numerics for standard map and Hennen-Hellis system, just briefly explaining the system a bit. So one more thing, like when your system is time independent, then you have n degrees of freedom, so n frequencies. When your system is time dependent and periodic, that can also have a frequency, right? Like if there is a time periodicity. So that also needs to be taken into account. So for one degree of freedom systems, in general, they can't show chaos if it is time independent. Like one degree of freedom implies two dimensions in phase space. Now, if you make it time dependent, it can show chaos, but there is only one frequency in the system as like internally. But if you are making it time periodic dependent in a time periodic manner, that introduces another frequency. The ratio of these two frequency matters in deciding which of the two I will like exist and like remain does not break apart, and which of the frequency, which of the tori will break apart. So standard map, like this is a question in assignment. So the Hamilton, like if you consider this Hamiltonian, so if I just consider this Hamiltonian where there is no time dependence, suppose this is completely integrable, right? If I just consider L is the action variable, and theta is the angle variable, and it is not dependent on theta. We can trivially integrate it. L t will be L naught using Hamilton's equation of motion, and theta t will be del H by del L. Will be L by I. So theta dot t, sorry. So theta t will be just like L by I times t plus theta naught. We can say like omega naught, which is a function of L. So that is the case when the system, suppose just H naught, I write it as. So now if you add a time dependent term, the system in continuous time notation, like it is called peaked rotor. It is a famous model to study various things, even in quantum chaos. So now we have added a time dependent term, a series of delta kicks at time period t. So apart from exactly at time t, this evolves freely, but after every time period t, there's a kick given to the system.
It's there in the last line. What did you do?
I mean, I'm just saying that omega naught is the frequency of the unperturbed system, which is
L by I.
Which is L by I. That's what I was saying. So it is a term dependent on L, in the sense that it varies, like it is not constant as in harmonic oscillator. In harmonic oscillator, independent of the energy you give to the system, the frequency is constant. So here it is dependent on L. So for, you can clearly see that if I draw like L versus theta, they will just be straight lines, right? But if you start with one initial condition here, one initial and condition here, after time t1, suppose, this may come to here, but this may go to here. That is the thing, since it is dependent on L, and L value for both these initial conditions are different. So they will evolve like a line. If you start with a line of initial condition, they will become a, like another, not a perpendicular line, but yeah. So that is important to see what is happening in the numerics. So I was just explaining that. So now this is called kicked rotor, and you can integrate it over one time period to get a discrete set of equations for L and theta. So to integrate it over a one time period, it shouldn't be done just as after writing the Hamiltons of equation of motion, just like this. You need to break it into two parts. Like suppose you want to integrate it from nt to n plus 1t. If this is what you want to do, you should actually choose nt plus epsilon to n plus 1t minus epsilon, and then n plus 1t minus epsilon to n plus 1t plus epsilon, in the limit epsilon tends to 0. This is how you should integrate. Like in this range, this is the only that is evolving. This will be 0. The second term is going to be 0. And in this range, since epsilon is very small, like integrating over this, there will be a 2 epsilon factor that will tend to 0, and this will be non-zero. So whenever you get a Hamiltonian where you have a delta pulse, there are various systems that you will come across in physics where you see these kind of system. You should always break it into two parts to integrate it. So that will be useful in the assignment to actually get the equations correctly, the discrete equation. So doing that, this is what this is called a standard map. Yeah, now I'll show the numerics of this standard map.
The L is also mod 2 pi. It's L also we make periodic.
I am a bit confused about that too, because in most of the places you see the way standard map is defined, they define it either as mod 1 or mod 2 pi. It makes sense to take mod 2 pi for angle variables, but I wonder why do they do that for the action variables, which I am also confused about why do they do that, but since that is the standard way they do it, I am just using that in my numerics, so I wrote that. But I agree that, like, according to me, according to the way I understand, in L, I don't think there should be a mod 2 pi. Just like in simple pendulum, momentum can go on, like the momentum is unbounded, but position is like angle, so you can take a mod 2 pi. So likewise here also. I don't know why everywhere they take mod 1 or mod 2 pi. So first we will see standard map. So K is the kicking strength, and as we vary K, what happens to the system? That is what we'll see. So for K equals to 0, it is clear what will happen, right? I just explained. There will be just straight lines. But in the discrete version, there will be discrete points and not straight lines. So if we, so this is just for one single point, how it evolves under this. So you can see that this is not, you can see the cursor, is it?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So this is not a continuous trajectory. You need to understand that. These are like a set of discrete points making up the trajectory. So this is evolution of a single initial condition. So this is for four different initial conditions, for example. Just want to say, like, what will we see in the next slides. So like different colors mean like they are different, they are related to different initial conditions. So like you can see disconnected curves here in the same color green, for example. So all of them are connected in a way, like it is discrete, so it can jump from one circle to another circle in that way. Unlike if it was continuous system, it continuous trajectory can't just jump, but this for discrete systems, it can jump. Is there a way to dim the light? That will be better, I suppose. Do you know?
Hit the presentation.
I think they are doing it probably. Yeah.
Okay. That it. Leave it.
No.
Presentation and leave it. I think they changed it.
Yeah, now they are changing it.
Leave it.
So different trajectories through different colors. That is what it means. So for zero, it is like we discussed what will happen. So you see discontinuous lines, just that if you evolve it for more number of iterations, they will seem more continuous, and all of them have different frequencies, so the way they evolve is like some of them already look continuous, but some of them not, but they are in reality like a set of discrete points and seeming like a continuous thing. So for k equals to 0.1, you can see some like near L equals to pi, you can see our tori has broken up and formed some elliptical like structure, right?
Oh, yeah.
And many of them are like in non-resonant tori, as I told, that they will deform a bit, but they will be preserved. So most of them are preserved, but there are some which are not preserved. So I'll give a zoom in version. So near L equals to pi, you can see that the tori has broken up and it has given rise to multiple fixed points. So other thing is that, as I had discussed in the lecture once, in Hamiltonian systems, what kind of fixed points can we have? And does anyone remember? Like we discussed,
I'm just saying volume has to remain constant.
Yeah, volume has to remain constant. So like unstable nodes or stable nodes can't be there because they either expand volume or contract volume. So the kinds of equilibrium points or fixed points that will be there in conservative systems are either saddles or centers. Like if you remember, center was something like around which the distance didn't like change, and saddle was something like in one direction it is like expanding, in other direction it is contracting. So in Hamiltonian system, these center like points are referred to as elliptic fixed points actually, and these saddle like points like are referred to as hyperbolic fixed points. Because center like points are non-hyperbolic in a way. I had discussed what are non-hyperbolic fixed points. So this is the weird terminology that they use. For center, they use, like for saddles, it is not non-hyperbolic. So they say that it is hyperbolic. And for center, like they say, the trajectories are like elliptical. So they call it as elliptic fixed point. So you can see a series of elliptic fixed points and like hyperbolic fixed points in Hamiltonian systems terminology developing near a resonant tori. So these, like the center of these.
What are you calling the resonant tori again?
I mean, tori near this kind of.
For us, initially the tori were the straight lines.
Yeah. And now they are deformed. So most of them are still straight line, like regular lines, curves, but they are deformed, they are not straight, right? But then there are some tori which are not like that. They have different feature, different types of dynamic. Does it make sense?
It's like now started becoming closed.
So that is what happens to resonant tori. Like this is proved by in Poincaré Birkhoff fixed point theorem. So I had told that in Hamiltonian systems, like when you introduce a weak perturbation, two theorems play an important role in helping us understand what is happening. One is Kamm theorem. The Kamm theorem tells us about the fate of non-resonant tori, that they are slightly deformed but preserved. Poincaré Birkhoff fixed point theorem tells the fate of resonant tori, that resonant tori break up and give a series of elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points. So this is near pi. Like in this figure, other ones are not visible so clearly. But if you zoom in, so this is near 2 point something. If you zoom in, you see another set of like elliptic and hyperbolic fixed point formed after like the breaking of the resonant tori. And then there is another one near 4.2 that you see here. So this, all these plots are for k equals to 0.1. Now I'll go on increasing k and see what is happening. So this is just like different types of what happens to single initial conditions, like how they evolve. So different types of dynamics. This is one type of dynamics. This is another type of dynamics. So now from 0.1, I have increased it to 0.3. And more tori are starting to break up and show the similar kind of behavior, that those tori break up and give a series of elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points. So this is just to give an intuition for several values of k I have plotted, what is happening. So overall in succession, you can see that more and more tori are breaking up. So this is for k equals to 0.4, just a zoomed plot. Then k equals to 0.5. You can see that there are more tori that is breaking up now, right? As we are increasing the perturbation strength, taking strength in a way. So k equals 0.6. K equals 0.7. And also the deformation of the Kamm tori, whichever are remaining, like the deformation is getting higher and higher, although they are still persisting. K equals to 0.8. So till now, there are several Kamm tori which are still persisting. So any initial condition, if you start with, it won't explore all the phase space owing to the Arnold diffusion that we were talking about yesterday, that these Kamm tori pose like a boundary and different regions in the phase space cannot exactly mix unless and until these Kamm tori are broken, like for n equals 1 or 2 degrees of freedom. Okay, equals 0.9. This is just a close up. Okay, equals to 0.9. And this is a close up version of the k equals 0.9. So here there is another interesting feature that you see, that now the quasi-periodic orbits about the elliptic fixed point are also starting to break up, and they are breaking up in a similar fashion, right? They are giving a series of hyperbolic and elliptic fixed points. Can you see here, like this quasi-periodic orbit has broken up, and you can see a series of elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points here. Like hyperbolic fixed points are not clear because they are saddles. So I have just generated a set of random initial conditions. So in these plots, I have generated like 100 initial conditions and evolved them for like 500 iterations. So that's how you get these plots. So whenever like in face portraits, you don't just plot one initial evolution of one initial condition. You plot the evolution of several initial condition and see what is happening. And there can be multiple, there can be multiple different types of dynamics in the phase space. So different initial condition will correspond to different kind of dynamics. Especially in Hamiltonian systems, this is more necessary because in dissipative systems you have attractors. So the system evolves to attractors. But in conservative systems, Hamiltonian systems, there are no attractors. So each initial condition can do a can have a different behavior. So to understand that, that's what happens. So here, like different quasi-periodic orbits, like one here and then other one here, they are breaking up and giving rise to elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points. So this gives rise to a self-similar structure in a way, that all these quasi-periodic orbits, how do they break? They break by this similar pattern as you keep on increasing the strength of the perturbation. And like it will probably give rise to a fractal-like structure in a way. Like again, now these, if you keep on zooming in, the how one of these islands will behave, for example. And that quasi-periodic trajectories surrounding that island, how will that break and give rise to ultimately chaos? So similar thing will happen even for that. So a very complicated kind of a structure is emerging. Can you see that? And when you increase the perturbation. So this is for k equals 0.95. Like you can see some trajectories here wandering around, like in this region and in this region. But there are some, like there here, a mixed phase space structure is clearly visible, in the sense that some initial conditions are behaving in a very predictable way, right? Like these quasi-periodic orbits, like near this, these orbits are behaving in a very predictable way. On the other hand, orbits near this, if you can see my cursor, so these orbits, initial conditions around that, like the tori has broken around that area, and the initial conditions are like exploring more area. It is difficult to exactly understand what is happening there, like through analytical calculation. So this is a mixed phase space that is peculiar of these Hamiltonian systems, that some initial conditions will behave chaotically, and if you calculate Lyapunov exponent for that, those initial conditions, you will get a positive value. On the other hand, if you calculate Lyapunov exponent for these initial conditions, you will get the maximal Lyapunov exponent will be negative or zero. Like for Hamiltonian systems, I guess it has to be zero. But so overall, like you don't really have just chaotic system or integrable or regular system. There is mixed phase space regime where the system is non-integrable, but still there are regions of phase space where the system behaves in a regular manner. So like different, this is just for with starting one initial condition. This initial condition like evolves in this way. On the other hand, a slightly perturbed initial condition explores this much amount of phase space. So that is the difference you can see, like one initial condition is restricted to such small area of the phase space. On the other hand, there is another initial condition that explores much, much larger area of the phase space. So around, I think for a kicked rotor, Lyapunov exponent, global Lyapunov exponent for the system can be computed analytically. And I think around, I don't remember exactly, but I think around 0.97, if you calculate Lyapunov exponent for every initial condition in the phase space and average it out, what is the maximum value that you are going to get? So around 0.97, it starts to show a positive value. Like overall, like there is decent amount of chaos in the system. So this is for 0.98. for k equals to 1, 1.1. So around k equals to 1.13, the last camptori is broken, and then any initial condition in the chaotic region of the phase space will explore all the chaotic regions of the phase space upon evolution. But still there are some regular islands. So now all camptori has broken.
This chaotic part is a strange attractor or?
So that's what strange attractors is also another kind of attractors, and that happens only in dissipative systems, or systems in which at least one part of the phase space is dissipative, if not whole. But the Hamiltonian systems are not dissipative, they are conservative. So that's why in Hamiltonian systems you can't have attractors. There can be no attractors in Hamiltonian systems. So it is not a strange attractor that way. It has shows some fractal-like behavior maybe.
It's kind of similar. It's attractor and it has fractal.
I mean attractor in the sense, what was the definition of attractor? It has to attract an open set of initial conditions towards itself, right? As time t tends to infinity. Nothing in Hamiltonian systems like does that, like from every direction. Okay, on saddles, like there exists one direction on which it will attract towards itself, but only on this stable direction, which is of measure zero in the phase space. And apart from that, everything else will either be repelled.
Yeah, because the volume is constant.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why these are not called attractors.
But it's like the same constant volume, which is like periodic, right? Like in this one?
It is not periodic. I mean, the thing is, if you take any initial condition, if it evolves, like if near a saddle point, in on one direction the volume is expanding, in other direction the volume is contracting, and overall it is happening in such a way that the volume remains constant of a blob of initial condition. So even though the system is conservative, even though the volume of initial condition has to be preserved, that doesn't imply that your system has to behave in a periodic manner. It can still show chaotic behavior. And these are because of these.
So we call this kind of partially chaotic part, something like that, because
I mean, so that's the thing, that the way you define or understand chaos in Hamiltonian systems versus dissipative systems is a bit different. Because in dissipative systems, you are mainly interested in attractors and their behavior. And what is the Lyapunov exponent? So it is in a much better way understand and understood and characterized in general dissipative system, general dynamical systems, I would say, than Hamiltonian systems. Thing is, you will still get positive Lyapunov exponent here. Like if you, for this trajectory, this is specific trajectory, if I calculate Lyapunov exponent, you will still get a positive value. On the other hand, if you calculate it, for this initial condition, you will not get a positive value. For this initial condition, you will get a positive value. So Lyapunov exponent is much highly dependent on initial conditions in conservative systems than in dissipative systems. That is the thing. So you will see like plots of phase space, like not phase space in the sense that x-axis is theta, y-axis is L, and different initial condition, what is the maximal Lyapunov exponent? That is what people plot in these kind of systems, conservative system, that as a function of initial condition, what is the Lyapunov exponent? Is it positive or not? So, and unless and until there is positive Lyapunov exponent on a set of non-zero measure in the phase space, you don't say that the system is chaotic. Like there can be some zero measure set in the phase space where you get positive Lyapunov exponent. Like for example, there can be one saddle in the system, an integrable system, like you have it in the simple pendulum, but it is integrable, we know that, right? But there is one saddle. So near that saddle point, if you calculate the Lyapunov exponent, you will get it to be positive just on that saddle point, on that specific trajectory. But that is of measure zero. Apart from that, anywhere else, if you compute Lyapunov exponent, it will not be positive, not be strictly positive. So if the set of initial conditions for which Lyapunov, maximal Lyapunov exponent is positive, if that set is of non-zero measure, then you say Hamiltonian systems to be chaotic. So yeah, this was for 1.15 and this was for one initial condition. It explores so much of A space. Like I iterated it for 200,000 times or something. This is for 1.3. And then you can see these regular islands as also starting to break apart, like in a similar fashion, generating these elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points. And that happens in a like alternating manner that you can see. This is for k equals to 2, 3, 5. There are just two small regions where it is periodic, rest everything is chaotic. And this is just for one initial condition. It can explore almost all of phase space. So when the system is globally chaotic, then you can study just one initial condition and explore its dynamics for a long period of time. For k equals to 6, like just one initial condition, this. And for k equals to 7, just one initial condition, it explores all the phase space. So now it is globally chaotic in that way. So this was for a standard map. You saw how an integrable system, when the system is just L square by 2i, if we added a time-dependent perturbation, how slowly it transformed into from perfectly integrable to a globally chaotic system. There is so much happening in between. So that is a time-dependent system. Here I describe another system which you will do in tutorial 4, the next tutorial. So this is a Hennen-Hellis system. It is a 2-degree of freedom system, time-independent. And the potential is given by this function. So just x square plus y square, if it was there, it would be integrable harmonic oscillator. But these nonlinear terms we are adding, and it becomes a nonlinear and non-integrable system. And this is a famous model for the studies of stars in galaxies. So first of all, as I had said, we need to understand, like for chaos, we are interested only in bounded motion, right? When the system is unbounded, we are not interested. So for chaos, we are only interested when the system behaves, like explores only a bounded phase space. For this Hamiltonian, you can see that if we take large y, the potential will become negative, it will become unbounded. And so this is a plot of equipotential lines of this Hamiltonian, this potential, where x-axis is x and y-axis is y, the 2 degrees of freedom of the system. So, and I have labeled it by the value of the potential itself. So you can see that for potential less than equal to 1 by 6, if I start in this region of phase space, the equipotential lines are like closed. So if I start in this region of the phase space with an energy less than that of equilateral triangle, then the system will behave in a bounded manner. So bounded motion for this region, like this, if I give the particle this much amount of energy, and if I start in an initial state in this region. So So for this, we will plot Poincare with Poincare map with surface of section that we'll choose is x equals to 0 and x dot is positive. So here we don't have any strength of the perturbation. So we instead we study different, like we fix an energy and then we plot these Poincare surface of section with these conditions. So for if I fix the energy to be this value, this is the Poincare map that we get. Here also you see a series of like elliptic fixed points, like, and then here there would be a hyperbolic fixed point, which is the saddle. So as we go on increasing the energy here, we see how these regular like tori start breaking up, and they also generate the similar kind of behavior that the tori breaks up. It leads to a formation of several elliptic and hyperbolic fixed points and trajectories around them. So this happens as we scale up the energy here. Till, and like we can do that for the mounted motion, which is 1/6. The energy is. So this is for the energy equals 0.11. And this is just a zoomed in version of the 0.11 energy. So here you can see like clearly several islands whose center will be like an elliptic fixed point. And these regions, in these regions, there is a hyperbolic fixed point, which are saddles actually. So this is increasing the energy. Slowly you see that the tori have broken up and they are leading to like chaotic like behavior. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Like, does anyone want to look at any picture once again and have any questions or something before I close this presentation? So
project on Poincare surface, do we expect that the volume is still constant in that map?
Area, yeah, so for maps, area, like, they will be area preserving maps. And for maps, how do you measure that? This is using the determinant of the Jacobian at every point of the phase space. If the determinant of the Jacobian of the map at every point of the phase space is 1, then the map is area preserving. For volume preservation, we check it using the divergence of the vector field. And for maps, we check it using the like determinant of the Jacobian matrix at every point of the phase space. If you can show that it is 1 for at every point of the phase space, it is area preserving.
So this one, this Poincare map that we used was area preserving.
Yeah. So this, in general, how to understand these kind of resonance islands, like those islands that form by breaking up of the tori, they are called resonance island. So how do they form? That in general, like taking the Henan-Hellis system and understanding it, for example, is pretty difficult analytically. But how do they form? Like this is a 1969 paper in which, like, if this is the general equation 2 is the general Hamiltonian where H naught is the integrable part. And V is the nonlinear part, non-integrable. So in equation 3, the Fourier series expand this. So they show that what happens if we just consider one of the terms in the expansion. So if we just consider this cos m, m phi 1, n plus n, n phi 2 term, it is called Mn resonance. I mean, you don't need to understand everything in detail. I was just telling that, okay, this is one paper where you can try to understand something analytically by using a simple model Hamiltonian. It may not reflect a real system, but by just considering one specific resonance there. Yeah, so they study some isolated resonances in which they consider only one of the terms in the Fourier expansion. And for that term, like here, they study a 2-2 resonance. And for just one term, this system is integrable because there exists an additional constant of motion. And like they show that what happens to these points, like here, just for one resonance, they show that, okay, there is like two elliptic fixed points have developed and two hyperbolic fixed points have developed. And then for 2-3 resonance, and like 2-3 resonance here, they show like there are three hyperbolic fixed points and three elliptic fixed points have developed. So this is still integrable if we just consider one term in the Fourier series expansion, and they have found an integral of motion. But if we increase, like if we just, instead of taking isolated resonance case, if we take more, just two terms, then the system becomes non-integrable. And then it starts showing chaotic-like behavior in at least small regions of the phase space.